Hey everyone, we here at System Mastery have had a lot of laughs, but today we wanted to talk to you about a question maybe you've been too embarrassed to ask your mom or dad. What is a role-playing game?
Well now John, I heard a role-playing game is a way to summon demons and access the occult.
Oh Jeff, no. You see, a role-playing game is, why it's kind of like a play, but you're writing the script.
Oh my goodness. What would I need to get into such an endeavor?
Aw, well, it's real easy. All you're gonna need is some dice, maybe of funny shapes. You're gonna need a pen or pencil and some paper. You're gonna need a good role-playing book, and of course, some friends.
Do you think I could add some pizza?
Oh, Jeff, you're incorrigible. Yeah, get whatever snacks you want. Soda, pizza, whatever your group likes. Maybe get some veggies in there. Huh? Just ask your parents.
What does a role-playing game feel like? One of my friends said it was like a fun tickle.
Oh, well, a role-playing game, it's magical. You can tell because only those of us with the sharpest of intellects and the most creative of imaginations will ever get into role-playing games.
That sounds like me.
I know. It sounds like all of us. Now, be sure that when you get together, you try to do your very best to play fairly.
Fairly? But what if I want to win?
Oh, Jeff, there's no winning in a role-playing game. You're getting together to tell a story. Sometimes it'll be a long one, sometimes a short one, like your favorite sketch comedy TV shows, Roundhouse, All That, or Upright Citizens Brigade.
I think I'm starting to get it. Like The Andy Dick Show, Maya and Marty in Manhattan, or The Mind of Mencia.
Exactly. It's like Hee-Haw, or like Cher Die, or Wondershowsen.
So what you're saying is that it's like The Entertainers, or The Electric Company, or Robot Chicken.
It's kind of like Viva Variety, or The Man Show, or Joke Book.
Or Crank Yankers, Out of Control, or Oh No, Mr. Bill Presents.
It's kind of like the Dana Carvey Show, not necessarily the news, or Rockin' America.
Jenny McCarthy Show, Welcome Freshman, the Lance Krall Show.
Stanker Vision, it's like the Tim and Eric Awesome Show, great job.
Key and Peele, Human Giant,
Welcome
Tracy
Freshman,
Takes On.
You wrote it,
thank God
you
you're here.
It.
Tim and Eric Awesome Show,
Martin.
Great job.
Hey Vern,
Out
it's
of Earnest
TV,
or Oh No,
Chelsea Handler
Mr.
Show,
Mr. Bill
the
Presents,
side.
Like
Billy
and Marcia
Buggins,
Dana's
Lane,
Marty
and Matt
Rick,
not necessarily the news,
it's like
American
Random, Key and Peele, the Lance Krall Show, Takes On. You wrote it, thank God you're here.
Welcome to Intermission.
Yeah. Welcome to Afterthought, the companion podcast to System Mastery, where every week we get together and discuss topics of interest. I'm Jeff, and as always, my co-host John is here with me. How you doing, John?
So good. Everything is great.
Back to normal.
Everything is wonderful. We have definitely not descended into madness.
Never. Not once.
Not ever.
My dementia. Okay, so this week we reviewed in the regular System Mastery episode, Dragon Ball Z, the anime adventure game.
We certainly did. Yeah, one of the things that I was going to bring up with that particular game that got brought up on a few of the discussions, some of the threads and so on, was the problem the game had with scaling.
Yeah, it definitely seems like they wrote it without the idea that they would eventually have to scale it.
Yeah, because you look at a standard character, and even then, the difference between, we mentioned in the show, like a 110-point power level character and a 660 is vast.
And I think that's actually one of the things that's a mark of whether or not a game is going to make it. You actually have to do the math before you publish the game.
Yeah, because in this, you have given characters that are like, here's a sample character, here's not even Goku, just like, here's one of the regular guys on the show. Like, here's Krillin. He sucks, but even he's got like an like 1,000 for PowerPoints.
Well, he works his ass off for those PowerPoints.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you try and take them away from Krillin.
He's the hardest working man in showbiz constantly gets the shit kicked out
of him.
He
might be the most badass human in the world.
Maybe.
Because that show's got kind of a eugenics vibe to it, where it's like, at a certain point on Dragon Ball Z, it doesn't matter how hard you train. If you're not Saiyan, get the fuck out of the race.
Oh, it's true.
So, that's the thing. Krillin works his butt to the bone so he can at least sort of fight. And even then, he's like, oh, I almost singed one of Nappa's leg hairs.
I'm not very good. I'm sorry, Goku.
I'm sorry. I'm just a human.
Krillin.
It's the best I can do.
I don't know why in my head I always imagine Krillin as sort of like a Pokemon and that he always just goes, Krillin.
I think it's because of there's an old internet thing that you're thinking of, which is
Dragon Ball Z abridged.
Abridged, yeah. That's because his one line in it is, I'm Krillin. I don't have any powers. I'm just a human. Yeah. So I think that's probably where that's coming from.
Krillin.
Hot noodles! No, okay, but that's definitely a problem we ran into just on Dragon Ball Z in general. But this book has a real problem with scaling, where when we read through it, like, okay, by the end of this game, this one first book, it's very easy to build an invincible character or to build a feedback loop where your game breaks, because if you set up a high enough reflection shield and then throw a power ball at it, you can end up with an eternal bouncing power ball between two high reflection shields. There's no mechanic for what eventually happens to a ball bouncing back and forth between the deflection shields you can put up.
Well, you angle it a little to the top, and then he has to move to hit it, and then it'll angle a little to the bottom, and you gotta hit it.
And you gotta go down there and come back up, and eventually someone gets a point.
Yeah, so someone will miss it. It'll go past them, and then you get a point.
All right. Pong.
Yeah, so, that's the name of one of the characters, I'm sure, is Pong.
There's no way there isn't a Dragon Ball Z character named Pong.
Yeah, come on.
All he does is put up super heavy reflection shields and just stand around. Come on, someone shoot me. Shoot at Pong.
the issue of scaling, I mean, it obviously isn't just Dragon Ball Z. A lot of RPGs have this problem of you look at a starting character, and that's all it seems that the writers really tested out. Mm-hmm. Is they're like, oh yeah, we've thoroughly tested this game with characters right out of the box, or like level 2 or 3.
Yeah.
And then it ends up where people go, oh man, if you make a character and he gets to like level 10, it's insane, nothing works anymore.
Yeah, or it's broken and your character advancement doesn't matter in the slightest. We reviewed one a really long time ago that suffered from that problem dramatically called Scion. We only recovered the first book. And the first book is like, hey, this game actually seems like it might be kind of fun. I mean, there's a lot of racism and sexism in here, but otherwise this is...
It's a lot of fun, though.
But the rules are kind of cool. Hey, what's in the second Scion book?
Oh, just shenanigans.
Oh, just impossible, unplayable nonsense.
Yeah, considering that your power level rises exponentially, you're like, oh, every time I put a point into something, it's not just going up by one, it goes up by a factor.
Yeah. And you hit that point at the end of the game where all your powers are like, well, what do you have for agility? I have 72 auto successes in agility if I try to do something with it.
Oh, so, great. Yeah. What's 1 point below that? 36 of auto successes. Oh, so unless you are the same or higher than me, I just win.
What's the difficulty required to accomplish a task most of the time in these games? Oh, like 3. You usually need like 3 successes.
Good. It's good that we've done this.
This is a great design.
Yeah, so I think that was one of the things I want to talk about, is the idea that a lot of people are only testing out the bottom end. And I mean, obviously, we're not really so much game designers, but any game designers who's listening to us, man, test out your math at the high end.
Do all the math. You gotta do all the math.
You can't just do the beginning math and assume your numbers will progress normally.
I think a lot of the time with these license type games, they tend to build out to the characters that they want in the game. Like, they're like, okay, I need to be able to build Krillin and Vegeta in this game, so I'll just build it till I have those two, and I'm done. We're good. We're all set.
Yeah.
Well, okay, but even now, as a writer of this Dragon Ball game, I am aware that Vegeta gets way more powerful later. Like, way more powerful later. And I need to have the rules in place for that to be the case. Oh, that's fine. I'll fix it in the next book.
We'll get it in post.
Yeah. From what I've gathered from people talking to us online, they actually did keep going with this series, and there were a bunch of them. They went all the way to the point where you could play a Super Saiyan 3 Goku and so on. And every further book just seems like a series of edits and kludges to try and fix the first book.
Yeah, apparently it's just a bunch of writers coming in going, oh my god, I can't believe this mess. Here's some rules to make this game less terrible.
Yeah. You know, it's not like... This isn't something that's a mark of an extremely bad game. It's just an extremely common mark of bad design. It shows up all the time.
Well, it's... The problem of the game designer not having, like, a degree in math.
Yeah,
you can go, I really love Dragon Ball Z. I love role-playing games. I've played a lot of role-playing games, and that means I know how to make one.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of a game that I particularly enjoy, a game that I actually would love to play and have play it run once or twice, which is the Iron Kingdoms role-playing game.
Yeah.
Set in the War Machine universe. When they eventually put out the other half, the I forget what it's called, but the Hordes source book for
Unleashed.
It. Thank you, Hordes Unleashed. When they put out the Unleashed source book for it, they couldn't figure out how to balance Warlocks and Fury casters with the old Focus casters from the first book, so they just didn't. Their kludge to fix it was, don't try to play these two books together, even though this is a fully compatible universe.
Just don't.
Just don't, because we're straight up admitting that all the things in the Hordes book are way better. Just, oops, sorry.
Well, the big problem was they were like, because you have to have a beast in order to be a caster, so casters just auto get a beast. It would be like if a caster in this auto got a jack.
Well, even that, it's not good enough. If you get, because, okay, for folks who don't know what that means, a jack's a giant robot that follows you around. And some people can control them, sure. But if they get broken, you have to fix them. You have to pay a ton of money to fix them. You have to take a ton of money to attach things to them and so on. If a beast gets hurt, you just wait a while and it heals back up.
Yep.
And instead of having to load it up with a ridiculously expensive array of fuels and coal and food and stuff that the robots need, you instead just like let it eat passing sheep and things. So ultimately having a beast is just so much better than having a jack. And you automatically get one that they just couldn't figure out how to balance it. And it's fine to me because it was a really easy answer. Wolf. Just give your Fury caster some dog or something that you can pull Fury out of, and you're all set. It's not powerful enough to matter.
Yeah.
But you can get some Fury from it.
No, but they added in, like, the actual things.
Yeah, whatever. So this is not something that even high-end, well-designed games are immune to, is where I was going with this.
No, well, the thing is, you have the unbalanced in progression on one end, say the DBZ, where at high power levels, things just completely fall apart into dumb Calvin ball.
Yeah.
Then you have stuff like Rifts, where gaining a level in Rifts doesn't matter.
Oh yeah, 4% better at basic math.
Yeah, there are just some classes that were better because they were randomly, for no reason, based on getting levels, and had a bunch of gated things. But then you had stuff like the Juicer, or any of the ones that were just, I shoot guys, that going up a level, maybe made your hand-to-hand ability better. But other than that, didn't matter for anything.
Yeah, a lot of the Rifts classes, or Palladium games in particular, tend to have a front-loading problem. Where you basically can pick your class based on which one is the most front-loaded and has the most crap out the gate, because leveling up is not going to matter in the future.
No.
And then you get an opposite problem from that going over to D&D, where there's a sweet spot. Everyone always says the most fun things you can do in D&D occur between levels 5 and 9. At level 9, wizards are too powerful to deal with anymore. Before level 5, everyone's a piece of shit.
Well, before level 5, wizards can't contribute enough,
yeah.
And after level 9, wizards take over.
So, you know, it's a different weird problem in every game.
Yeah. So that's, even if you have a weird progression to your game, just make sure the numbers at least play out.
That's all you really need to do, and that's all you really can do, beyond the innovative concept of killing off the leveling experience and just having your character remain relatively static throughout the course of the game.
Yeah.
Just have progression occur sideways. I think that's the way Fate does it.
Well, you get more options rather than more power.
Yeah, which is also a fine way to build.
Yeah.
Anyway, what do you say to answering a couple of questions this week?
Only a couple. Just two questions.
All right, let's start with just two questions. And what I'm going to do here is ask you two questions, each of which has about 16 parts contributed by different people.
Okay, that sounds great. Let's do that then.
All right, here we go. First set of questions comes to us from North Star. North Star asks,
I love your fist.
I love how it blows up gross dudes' heads.
I love how when you fist dudes, it blows their head.
Reviewing as many old games as you do, you must come across certain game design choices that are best left forgotten, and perhaps some newer games would be wise to keep. What design elements, mechanics, conceit, DM-PC relations, etc., anger you the most, and what ones would you most like to see would you like to see more frequently in newer games?
Okay, so what thing in a game, design-wise, makes you the angriest? I mean, outside of merits and flaws.
Okay, I'm not going to say merits and flaws. I'm going to say, in the past I've said that I thought this was an innovative idea, but ultimately I came around to it belonged in the Burgess Shale of forgotten role-playing game ideas, and that's games where you can give the DM XP.
Huh?
Where it's like, oh, did the DM do a good job? He gets 3 DM XP points.
Oh, good.
It's a pointless waste of time and basically just another excuse for people who like to write things down on sheets to do so. So I'm glad that died. It doesn't do anything. The DMs has absolute power. He doesn't need 3 XP.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think one of the designs that shows up a lot, and it usually ends up being in a merit or flaw system, is the unlucky or lucky trait.
Oh yeah,
I think only when it's controlled by the DM.
Yeah, I think I've pointed out a couple times on the show that that's basically a game of chicken that you buy.
Yeah, and the problem with it is if I buy lucky or unlucky and the DM gets to decide when that shows up, then it's not even a power I get to use. It'd be like, oh yeah, my wizard knows a spell, but only the DM can tell me when I get to cast it.
Yeah.
There's no point in having it.
Augury is another one that works the same way. Anytime your character can tell the future and the DM has to answer these questions three...
Well, at least with the questions one, like the augury where it was, oh, you can ask the spirits these questions. You're like, okay, that's fine. I have to ask specific questions. But when it was just the prophecy spell, it was like, oh, you get a vision of the future. It's always, all right, the DM has to go, you see smoke and fire. A figure in the distance holds three chickens, and with him comes rain. And you're like, oh, great, thanks, fuck you.
And the DM's gonna be like, well, I don't fucking know, I didn't write next week's adventure, quit casting that spell, you shit.
And even if he does, he's not gonna be like, all right, you see the villain has kidnapped your girlfriend and is holding her hostage inside of the old toy factory. And you're like, oh, well, fuck, I'll just stop that then. You're like, great, thanks, I'm glad you had a spell that either does nothing or ruins the game.
Yeah, those can go without. Things that have disappeared from games that could probably stand to be put back in. I'm going to say giving the fighter a castle. level 9.
Armies.
At level 9, the fighter should get a castle and a bunch of dudes. That disappeared between 2nd and 3rd edition. I want that back.
The idea of the henchman is really interesting to me because I never played during that era where it was assumed you would have hirelings.
Oh yeah, hirelings were straight up a resource. They were a depletable resource, just like hit points.
Yeah, no, it was assumed going in. You're like, oh yeah, you're definitely going to have a couple guys that go with you. You'll probably have a few, like, fighter guys, but you may have hired a wizard or something. Like, you'll just go into a dungeon with extra guys.
Why wouldn't you want to take a couple extra guys to the dungeon?
Yeah, you're just going to go in there. You'd be like, these are my dudes. I brought these dudes with me.
I named them the way that, like, Batman villains name their guys. So they all have, like, a theme name.
Yeah.
Even though, don't let him argue with you. His name's not Tony. It's Wednesday or something, because... Because I've named them all after days of the week.
Obviously. And of course, the girl henchman that you have is named Friday.
Oh yeah, of course it is. And we're not going to explain that further.
No.
Nope. Okay, moving on. Next question. What is the source of John's anger?
I don't know where you're getting that I have anger from, really. I mean, I'm a very laid back, very chill kind of guy. There's not a lot of anger going on over here. I think Jeff has a lot of anger.
No, I have a lot of low simmering hate. I'm not usually angry at things. I'm more like pleased at being correct in how much things disappoint me.
So you're like someone's dad who's just, he's not angry, he's just disappointed.
That's right, yeah. So I'm not an especially angry person either, but, you know, the question wasn't about me. I don't know why you're trying to push this over there, angry guy.
Hey, calm down.
Bring it in. Count to 10 for me, John.
I think probably...
John, is it clown nudes?
It might be.
Is it clown nudes that make you angry?
Yeah, when clowns send me nudes, I get real angry about clown nudes.
Aw, you made it.
I did it. I finally got through saying the words clown nudes without breaking down into a hopeless pile.
We both have tears on our faces right now from one of us saying clown nudes in a cutscene.
Oh man, the magic of editing has made you miss this. There was probably about a good 2 minutes there where I could not breathe because of laughing.
Because of laughing at clown nudes.
All right. That's what happens behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes, system mastery. Next question. My very first foray into RPGs was with Rifts. Hey, me too.
Hey, good job.
And my first character was a Glitter Boy, because obviously I want to pilot a mech with a hugely powerful gun at level 1. Hey, that's what we were talking about. Also, I'm not sure if you are aware... But there are rumors of a Savage World source book for Rifts. We are. What would you worry about losing the most from Rifts in a new update? I'm not worried at all. There's been no word about that Savage World's Rifts update since the first time it was announced.
Yeah.
I don't believe any Palladium project, even if it's just a Palladium-associated project, until I see the paper.
Yeah, no, anytime they're like, hey guys, we're gonna have a Rifts movie. No, you're not.
Nope. We're gonna have a Rifts video game. Yeah, you are, but no one has a fucking N-gauge.
Yeah, anytime anyone's like, oh, there's going to be Rifts GURPS. No, there isn't.
Yeah, don't worry about it. We're going to put out Juicer Uprising 2! No, you're not.
No, you're not going to do anything until I have a book in my hand. Your shit does not exist.
Yeah, I mean, to answer the question, honestly, the things you're mostly worried about losing from old Rifts books are the sense of crazy fun and the kind of energy. It's one of those games that these days I would not recommend people play because it's just not balanced or, you know, even really all that much of a game.
But no, it was definitely the feel of, like, 12-year-old child decides to sit down and write a role-playing game and then comes at you with a bunch of scribblings and some notes in the margin and a picture of a beetle that he drew.
Yeah, you can write it. It's angry.
It's an angry beetle.
That's what we'll call them, angry beetles.
Yeah.
Just like on my favorite Nickelodeon show, Angry Beetles.
Two angry beetles.
All right. And let's see, one more here. You have been tasked with designing a new RPG system to teach schoolchildren about the process by which candidates are decided upon to lead the political parties in America. How would character generation look in this game? What skills, feats, or classes might people choose? So it's an RPG where you build like a politician, so you can like choose your class from political parties or like the type that you are.
Okay.
All right.
So I guess spin would be your agility.
Yeah, agility becomes spin. Let's see, you'd have a constitution score, which is just sort of deflection. It'd be like Teflon.
Yeah.
You'd have a Teflon score. Like what's going on with Trump right now, where you can straight up just sort of like point out that his butt is showing and it doesn't matter. It doesn't hurt him. Nothing hurts him.
Yeah. let's see.
Okay, so I guess...
Strength would be rhetoric?
XP is votes?
Maybe?
Yeah, this is a tricky one. We may have to think on this question and come back to it some other time, because it seems like it requires a lot of time and design.
Kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's see. There you go. We're gonna think on that. I don't think there's any major jokes coming out of our mouths at the moment.
Yeah, well, I mean, you'd definitely get a few feats. You'd have, like, filibuster.
Oh, yeah, filibuster, like, three levels of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd have, like, a bag of rats where you could throw a bunch of rats on the ground and spin around and hit all the rats and then also hit everyone else on the debate stage.
Obviously.
Yeah. Whirlwind cleave, where you could, like, get an axe and just hit the other guy next to you.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously.
Yeah, just like in the real debates.
Just like in British Parliament.
Yeah.
Have you seen that shit?
Yeah, the new ones, from the most recent source book, where it's like, brag about the size of your dick during an actual debate.
Oh, God. Sigh.
I love the world we live in.
Hooray.
Okay, moving on. Next question comes to us from AmiYumi, and he asks, which is the best French mother sauce? So the options are bechamel, espagnole, hollandaise, tomate, or veloute, and why? John?
Ketchup. I'm going to go with ketchup.
Ketchup, very good. Okay. I'm actually a fan of espagnole sauce. I like sauce africaine, so it's something I like a lot. That's, if you're not familiar, it's a dark roux that's made with a lot of beef stock and, of course, roux, so it's going to have a lot of flour and butter. It's very similar to a gravy, but sauce espagnole tends to be a little too heavy to use by itself, so you have to add additional things to it. It becomes very zesty. I like having it converted into sauce africaine by adding, like, Cajun spices. You end up with a really nice, zesty, like, steak seasoning sauce.
I like ketchup.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is I have a weird aversion to white sauces, which keeps me off of hollandaise, bechamel, even veloute a little bit. But, I mean, bechamel I can kind of be brought around on because it's just flour and butter and milk. I mean, it's usually the thing I don't like is mayonnaise. I'm anti-eggs. And so mayonnaise keeps me away, but bechamel is actually pretty tasty, especially when you throw cheese in there to make that Normandy sauce. Oh, my God.
You know, sometimes if I'm feeling particularly saucy, pardon the pun, I'll have marinara.
Well, you know, marinara but is basically a tomate. You know, you look at a tomate sauce, the mother sauce of French cuisine, and think, oh, that's just marinara sauce. Why do the French have just marinara sauce? That's clearly an Italian thing. But there's a lot of intermingling in the culture of who developed which sauce, and tomato sauce is just an important part of French culture and cuisine as well. So, yeah, good answer. You can go with a tomate. Does that work for you?
Ketchup. And that's been the bit.
That's the bit, folks. Next question comes to us from Bush-era liberal filmmaker Michael Moore. And he says, greetings, Dark Masters of Planet System. I have three questions to ask of you. Number one, if the Olympics were held in Haven, City of Violence, what would happen? Would they try to clean up for the tourists, or would the tourists have to wear full-body Kevlar body armor to attend?
Well, you know that what would happen is all of the different crime lords would attempt to extort and make all of the construction and so on cost way more than it should because they're taking all of the money out.
I feel like some fat guy with a doofy mustache would get blamed for a fake bombing attempt.
I feel like there'd probably be just like really shitty accommodations that they overcharged for. Maybe like, I don't know, feral dogs in the street.
Yeah, something like that. I feel like they'd probably bulldoze like 8-9 city blocks with people still in them just so they could build all the various stadiums.
Well, they'd probably put a stadium out in like the middle of nowhere where no one will ever visit it again.
Oh, Rome Island? Yeah, okay.
And then just let nature take it back.
Oh, like what's happening in Brazil now?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're doing Brazil and I'm doing Atlanta.
And I was also doing Russia.
Oh, okay, very good. Because I was going off the Richard Jewell story. All right. So, yeah. Next question. Which Planescape outer plane would you most want to go to after death? Which one would you least like to go to?
Okay, so, I mean, I guess, Olympus, I think, is the one?
Yeah, Olympus is a really good choice. I think that's either the chaotic or lawful good one.
I think it's chaotic.
Yeah, I think so. I'd probably want to go to Bytopia.
I bet you would.
Right?
Hey!
I'm sure it's probably pronounced Bytopia or something like that, but it's spelled Bytopia, and it's the neutral good one that's also known as the Happy Hunting Grounds, and it's like a cool nature place where there's a sky and there's like a ground in the sky up there. Like there's two worlds that are sharing one sky, so one's upside down. I always liked that. And
there's two worlds, one family.
Oh, God damn it. Don't quote Tarzan, the Disney adaptation, at me.
Oh, don't you dare stop me from quoting some Phil Collins at you. I will do it when I want, sir.
Fair enough. I would also would not mind the plane of Concordant Opposition. That's the true neutral plane, but it's very nicely set up so that, the closer you get to the other planes, the closer they are to that plane's ideology, but it's not quite as extreme, which is good, because, I like a little spice. I like a little sleaze from time to time, but that doesn't mean I want to go to fucking Tartarus.
No.
But if I can go near Tartarus, close enough so that the drinking age is 18, then that's fine.
Yeah, it's like driving across the border when you live in a dry town.
Yeah, it's like that, or like driving into TJ, or Tijuana, I need some fireworks, I think I'll just go over to the part of Concordant Opposition that's close enough that fireworks are pretty much all right.
Yeah. I think the one I'd least want to go to is probably going to be, I want to say the, whatever the plane with the Modrons is.
Mechanus.
Mechanus, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to Mechanus.
It's just gears and stupid robots.
Oh, yeah, because Modrons are hilarious.
Yeah.
But if I was actually in there, then I'd be like, oh, this is the worst. I do not want to be bossed around by a D12.
Well, the funny thing is they stop looking like dice at a certain point. And eventually they start looking like ugly dudes. Most of them look like thumbs with like radial symmetry.
Oh, then I'd fit right in there.
Yeah, you'd be fine. They'd be like, oh my gosh, you might be one of our high-ranking ones. Do you have a dumbass collar with a bunch of gears hanging off it?
Boy, do I. Let me tell you about steampunk.
You'd be fine. Let's see. I would probably least like to go to, I don't know, just one of the random terrible evil ones.
The Abyss.
Yeah, the Abyss or something like that. I don't want to get stuck on 666 eternal dimensions. I'm good. I'm all set. Thank you.
That's fine. We already got one.
Yeah. I gave it home. Which Disney animated movie would make the best setting for an RPG?
For an RPG?
For an RPG. And I think we could probably discount the obvious choice of the Black Cauldron, which is an RPG,
yes,
for love of God. I mean, it's based on the Terran Wanderer series. It's straight up correct for an RPG.
Yeah, no. What I will say,
in the hard mode on this,
I'm also going to not give Hercules.
Yeah.
Because it's already mythology, so I don't want to just set it in a standard fantasy setting.
Okay. Well, I can go first if you want.
Okay. Is it Titan A.E.?
Oliver and Company. First of all,
it's Oliver and Company. Okay.
Titan A.E. is not a Disney movie.
Oh, no. I'm thinking of Treasure Planet.
You are thinking of Treasure Planet, which would be an amazing setting for an RPG.
Yes.
But I feel like it's been done, and I feel like we may have even reviewed it already. Instead, I want to go with Oliver and Company. I want to play as dog thieves living in New York with special powers for singing.
Okay.
Yeah, that's going to be me. So that's going to be my choice, where you can like learn to grind rails with your paws.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just sounds awesome to me.
That does. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, what do you got?
Okay, so I'm going to go with the Song of the South.
For the love of God. You know, only like a small portion of the Song of the South is animated.
Oh, I know.
That's like saying, oh, Pete's Dragon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Pete's Dragon is perfect. I'm going to go with the Apple Dumpling Gang.
Damn it. I'm going to go with Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Okay. No, if I had to go with one of the, like, classic Disney ones, I'd probably want to go with... I feel like anyone has just one character you'd be, though. So if I say, like, oh, it'd be Lion King, that'd be cool. Except you'd have to have, like, a class would be a warthog, but then everyone would just be Pumbaa. Like, if yeah, you played that, you wouldn't be able to be your own thing.
I feel like maybe a good solid answer would be Little Mermaid, because then you're playing as mermaids, and there's a clear set of villains, which are like octopus and manta ray and shark people.
Except you wouldn't, because the entire point of Little Mermaid is being on the shore. It has nothing to do with mermaids.
Well, yeah, but it's a setting. We're not talking about what's the best way to represent Ariel's journey, but, you know, all those other mermaids that aren't annoying and aren't willing to trade their voice for a vagina.
Man, I am totally willing to trade my voice for some vagina. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wish you would.
All right. Those
are the questions of Bush era liberal filmmaker. Michael Moore. Did you have a real answer, though?
No,
I'm sorry.
I think the real answer is going to be Sleeping Beauty, because then it would just be Deliria.
Oh, that's fair enough. Yeah, okay. There's fairies running around.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. Good.
There we go.
I like that. That's solid. All right. Next set of questions come to us from... The Great Ghoul.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
I hate lesser ghouls.
Yeah, they're not great. This one is great.
This is great.
Yeah. Dear Jefferson and Johnson. Man, Jefferson is my father's name. I am Jeffersonson.
Yes.
But mainly John, because I think he is the bisexual one. But seriously, y'all, you do sound the same.
No, we
Man,
don't.
Man, I've been thinking he's the bisexual one for years. Now, trust me, that's a tree you can't bark up.
Yeah.
No, okay. No, I'm the bisexual one, and I'm Jeff, and I sound like this.
Yeah, and I am not the bisexual one, and I am John, and I sound like this.
And I'm Krillin, and I don't have any powers, I'm a human.
God damn it.
So here's the deal. I'm a straight dude, okay? I support gay rights pretty hardcore. Y'all
Good
should
job.
Be able to marry, adopt, fuck, parade, and just generally get as weird with his sexuality as you want. And also, Ryan Gosling is super hot, I totally get it. I kind of think he has a banana face. Anyway... However, I have a fairly major problem with this stance. Gay dudes, as well as trans women, but maybe you can't help me with that one, weird me the fuck out. The thought of y'all getting freaky with each other is pretty gross to me, and even casual contact with gay guys makes me go all like, wow, I bet that dude having sex looks super gross.
Well, let me just stop you there. Dudes having sex, regardless of who they are having sex with, looks super gross.
Yeah, there's a reason why whenever you're watching porn, you usually just see that guy's dick and ball, like, butt crack. It's because his face looks stupid.
No, if you're looking at, like, a full-on, let's just watch this dude have sex, man, that is not pleasant for anyone.
Oh, yeah, it's just hairs and grunting. Ugh. It's like looking at a field of pigs.
Yep, there you go.
No reason to look at that. Men look gross having sex. This is coming from a dude who has sex with men.
Yeah.
I'm willing to admit it. You just kind of squint your eyes and go at it. You just...
You just pray for the best,
just,
really.
Yeah, you just make it happen. It's like if you work as a garbage man. You know, you don't have to look at it, but you get paid at the end.
Yeah.
I'm a gay prostitute, too, by the way.
Good job.
Anyway, now, obviously, this is a problem with me. That's the great
goal.
Yes,
obviously.
Nothing wrong with gay dudes being all gay-like. Something seriously wrong with me for having a problem with it. But how do I fix it? I don't want to go through life being all homophobic, dude. Please help. The internet mostly confirmed that I was fucked up for being weirded out, which, again, I totally concede. Thanks, the Great Ghoul. All right, so...
Well, yeah. Now, granted, at least you are aware enough to understand that it's wrong that you have that reaction to it.
And you know, I want to give you another point of credit here that'll probably make you feel a little better. At least you're only grossed out by the thought of two other dudes having sex, because normally when I encounter homophobic guys, they're afraid that every gay dude they see is thinking about them.
Yeah, there's that weird thing where you're like, oh, if I'm around a gay guy, he's going to immediately want my dick. And I'm like, nah, man, no one wants your dick.
Nope, even girls don't want your dick. Why do you think gay dudes, way less discriminating than girls, still don't want your dick? You're right, they don't.
No.
So at least you don't have that problem.
Now, being that I did study psychology for a bit, I had many classes in it. I almost switched my major to psychology. I do have a suggestion for you. Now, there's something in therapy that we like to call the immersion therapy. So what you're going to need to do is just watch just a ton of gay porn. Like, all of it. Get at least a few gigs. At least.
Yeah, a couple of gigs of gay porn. You're going to be able to find that on, you know, like, Pirate's Bay or...
Oh, yeah. Now, once you've watched probably a good solid 6 straight hours, just sit down, block out an afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me tell you right now that just Googling gay porn, that's not going to be good enough. You need to get into the definitions and break it down a little bit. You need some bear gay porn. You need some cuckolding. You need some military fetishism. Maybe some gay foot stuff. That's a thing. Believe me. Oh, God, is it ever a thing? Fart porn? Oh, my God. Gay dudes are nasty. Take it from me. So you're going to need to get every single kind of that. Hairless, shaving into having more hair. It's weird, the stuff they can do.
Yeah, and yeah. You just do that. Yep. Watch it for long enough until the point where it just becomes numb, and you're like, oh, now I realize I don't care. Everything in life is gross. And no matter what anyone does, I assume it's terrible. And then you'll have the viewpoint that I have. Everyone's awful, and I don't care anymore.
Okay, so realistically, there's not much you can do to block the concept of gross gay sex out of your head. Just don't worry about it, because it'll never happen to you.
Yeah.
It's fine. You know, every time you think that gay sex is gross, watch one of those horrifying videos on YouTube of some guy getting a cyst on his back popped.
Oh.
And think, well, that's more gross than gay sex.
Hey, someone's jerking off to that right now.
Yeah, that's even grosser than gay sex. The concept of what people jerk off to. So,
yep.
There you go. Yeah, you know, it's good that you're supporting. Don't worry too much about the concept of gay dudes having sex, because it's just not relevant to your life experience.
Yeah.
You'll be fine.
It's not your fault.
Don't you go there, man.
It's not your fault.
Shut up, man.
It's not your fault.
Why does it have to be so hard? My dick.
Boners.
Okay. Next question comes to us from the White House Press Secretary, Ron Ziegler.
Oh, good. I haven't talked to you in forever.
Yeah. Dear Podcasting Professionals Incorporated, the Committee for the Re-election of the President would like to request your input on the following inquiries as being critical to our efforts here in the past timeline of September 1972. First, who would win in a fight, John or Clubber Lang?
Obviously me.
Yeah.
I can time travel in this scenario, so even if he goes to beat me, I would just travel back and do it again, but this time I'd do it right.
Well, I'd just travel back far enough to drop him on his head a couple times as a baby.
Well, I'm pretty sure someone did that already.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, okay, fair enough. So you're just going to do that short-duration time travel thing where you're like, okay, duck to the left. You're basically just going to save state the guy.
Oh, I'm pretty much doing the Sherlock Holmes movie thing where it's like,
oh
he's going to do this and then that. I'll counter with this, go through that, and then he'll punch here, and then I'll punch him in the throat, and everything will be great.
I always wonder, in that scenario with Sherlock Holmes, is like, I can totally predict this. How does he deal when he's fighting someone who's just a crazy son of a bitch?
Well, it's like Batman versus the Joker, where Joker actually gets to hit Batman a lot of the time because Batman knows fighting styles. So when he's up against a guy, he's like, oh, your stance is you're about to throw a right hook. I can tell the way your body's moving. But Joker's like, I don't know what I'm doing at any given moment. So, yeah, here we go.
Let's just see what happens. Hope for the best.
Yep.
All right. Fair enough.
Joker's fighting style is basically like me and dicks.
Okay.
I just hope for the best.
Who is your favorite fictional head of state?
Fictional head of state?
Yeah.
Anytime it goes to Morgan Freeman.
You can go with Morgan
so
Freeman.
So Deep Impact is what I'm saying here.
As the president. I think he was also the chief of staff in Air Force One?
Oh my God, but Bill Paxton.
Ooh, Bill Paxton is the president from fucking Independence Day?
Oh yeah.
Oh wait, is that Bill Pullman?
No, that's definitely Bill Paxton.
Are you sure?
Maybe.
Who could possibly know?
Who could tell?
Let's see. I'm going to go with that girl Prez from the current comic series, Girl Prez. It's like a comic book about a little, or like a teenage girl president, and there's like superheroes running around and stuff too. It's very, very sarcastic and silly and crazily presented. I really enjoy it.
Sweet.
Yeah, so there you go. That'd be mine.
All right.
Oh, also when Hagar from Marvel vs. Capcom 3 becomes the president.
Oh, also
big fan of that.
The super old, terrible cartoon Super President.
Oh, dude. I think it's, the guy's name is like a Grover Cross or something like that. And yeah, he is a superhero who is the president.
And no one knows his secret identity, even though his superhero name is Super President.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's so good. If you were to describe the room you're currently podcasting in the style of a Gygaxian dungeon master, what would it be like?
All right.
Okay, you have encountered a roughly 10 by 12 foot room.
It is dank, and the smells emanate from all corners. You see two lumpy creatures. They appear hunched over strange arcane devices. They speak in a tone that is
deep and menacing. They do not speak common, and the words they say are confusing.
Piles of filthy kobold leavings litter the room in every corner. A disgusting bed that would grant you no rest also is visible.
And upon it, you see heaps of filthy rags.
Hey, I just washed those.
Fuck you and your laundry.
Oh, God. All right. And is that it? Oh, finally, I would like... Yeah, okay. He's suggesting the movie Spawn for movie mastery.
Man, Spawn... I don't know if I've mentioned this on air, but Spawn is one of those movies that is just a scene missing for me.
Oh, that you saw, but you have absolutely no memory of
seeing? I saw it in theaters, and I literally cannot remember anything about it.
And I feel like the things I remember about it are enough that I've seen it. I'm like, okay, there's a fat clown. There's a scene where he eats a slice of pizza with maggots on it. There's a scene where the fat clown gets kicked into space. And then everything that Spawn does is just him taking off his cool Spawn mask, because it was in that era of superhero movies where they were afraid to keep the mask on.
Yeah.
Because they were like, well, we got to show Michael Jai White's face a bunch of times. He's got a contract.
Yeah.
And so they keep showing his face, and all he does is yell Wanda. The whole movie's Wanda! 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 Which means you're like, all right, at least the John Leguizamo clown is doing something.
Huh.
Also, there are a couple of CGI shots in there of Violator and of Malebolgius or whatever, the devil in that.
Maybe. Something. I don't know.
And I swear to you, they look like CGI kangaroos. Because it's like 1997 CGI.
Yeah, like I said, nothing. Cannot, for the life of me, dredge up one memory of it.
I feel like just going, Wanda, should get you back on track. So if it's not, then we have to watch it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we'll add it to the list. Okay, we're moving on to questions from Greg H. And he says, would you rather be Chi-Chi and married to Goku or be Bulma and be married to Vegeta? What?
Obviously Chi-Chi.
Oh, because you get to be married to Goku?
Yeah, because I feel like that's probably not a healthy relationship, the Bulma-Vegeta, for either end.
No, it definitely isn't. I'd still probably be Bulma just because Bulma's rich as shit.
Oh, that is true.
She owns Capsule Corp, and what's Vegeta going to do when I just dump his ass?
I don't know, try to blow up a planet?
Someone already blew up the moon. He's going to have to go pretty far to be petulant. So I'm going to go ahead and go with Bulma, and at least that way I get way cooler kids. Let's face it, Trunks is so much cooler than Gohan.
No way, man. Gohan is the best. He's a superhero.
He dresses up in a dumb superhero outfit and calls himself the Great Saiya Man.
I know.
Trunks just runs around with purple hair and a sword. Although, I'm going to go ahead and say that Trunks does have, like, early 90s slacker hair.
Oh, yeah. No, he looks like such a chode.
Oh, my gosh.
If I was Bulma, I'd be like, young man, where do you think you are going?
Listen here, you are one brown dye job away from looking like Eddie Vedder in 1993. You go cut that shit short for military school, now.
Oh, but Dad has huge hair.
Yeah, at least his hair has the good graces and dignity to go up. You look like a young Crispin Glover. Get out of here. All right. What color scheme should I use for my kitchen remodel?
Avocado green. Done.
Eggshell. Eggshell and avocado.
Avocado shell green.
Yeah, 1970s colors. Let's go with those. You got to get some avocado green.
You got to get some flower prints in there.
Burnt orange. You're going to need some of that.
Yeah.
Like a gradient from yellow to brown, and then for some reason, green.
Basically, anything you would find in a sick baby's diaper. Go with that.
Go with that. Anything you'd find in your grandparents' towel collection. That's what you want. Find yourself a 1980, like, Daihatsu pickup truck and go with whatever color that is.
Probably rust.
Yeah. All right. What discontinued product do you miss?
Okay. So, there was this weird, like, dessert snack thing from Planters that was a, like, a peanut butter inside of a, like, wafer shell thing. And the shell itself was made to look like a peanut shell.
Okay.
And it was like...
You're not describing a Nutter Butter right now, are you?
No, no.
Okay.
I'm saying it was like, you know those wafers with the little cream in the center?
Yeah, okay, sure, yeah.
Okay, so it's like that wafer type of thing, but it's a peanut shape, and it's peanut shell shaped. So
okay.
It's got that, like, dip in the middle, and it makes a little peanut.
Okay, sure.
And then inside is, like, peanut butter.
Okay.
And that was, I don't even remember what it was called, it was, like, PB Slammers or some shit that sounded like, I don't know, a theme restaurant in England.
Okay, I am going to go with LCD watches that play Tetris.
That wasn't discontinued.
Yeah, they are. You try and fucking find one.
No, I mean, it wasn't discontinued. It was just gotten rid of for the sake of all mankind.
It moved to the cell phone. I understand that. I still would like a watch that plays Tetris so I can do it at work.
Meh.
But no, whatever. I didn't make fun of your PB Slammers.
Dude, PB Slammers and an Ecto Cooler, that shit, the tits.
Sure. I'm not disagreeing with that. But at the same time, I would like a watch that plays Liquid Crystal Tetris. Or at least one that is also a Transformer.
At least.
Yeah. So there you go. Those are our two answers. Let's see. What is the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you in your romantic life? Oh, clown nudes.
God damn it. Oh, I hate you so much. Oh, get it together. Okay. Fuck. Okay. I got this. I'm okay. I'm all right. Clown noobs. All right. So the most embarrassing thing that's happened in my romantic life?
Yeah. Jeez. I don't know. I'm blanking on this one. I'm trying to think of something good.
Yeah. Embarrassing things. That's weird.
Problem is, I'm super good at dating. I'm
so good.
I'm real good at it. I put a lot of thought into it. I know what I'm doing.
Oh, shit.
Yeah,
no.
You got something?
I don't even know if I want to say this on a podcast, but okay. You know what? Fuck it. Here we go.
Let's cut to a clip.
Let's cut to the clip of me.
No, you want to tell the story or do you want me to cut to an embarrassing clip?
Okay, no. Here we go. Here we go, audience. It's time to overshare.
Let's get real.
Let's get really real and tell you the literal most embarrassing thing that I have ever done in a relationship.
Okay, fire away.
Okay, so the first time that I ever had sex, I was 17 years old. And my girlfriend at the time was 19. And after that, we got done and I was like, man, I could send you to prison for statutory. Was one of the first things I said after having sex for the first time.
Just had that thought.
Just had that thought and didn't keep it to myself.
Yeah, I lost my virginity at 15, also to a 19-year-old girl. And afterwards, someone told me that she was just hoping I would help her get meth. And I was like, that doesn't seem real. We're both just junior lifeguards. It was the junior lifeguards program where that happened.
Ugh.
And they were like, yeah, she's a major druggie.
Major.
And then I asked her and she's like, yeah. And at the time, being 15, I was like terrified as shit of that.
Ah.
I was like, ooh, I don't ever want to see you again. Gross. Because drugs are for losers.
Yeah, Bugs Bunny and Garfield told me so.
So that was I guess that was medium embarrassing.
Yeah, maybe.
I did spend a 3-day period working at a haunted house, like doing that Halloween job of working at a haunted house.
Yeah.
And my job at the time was to be a person with my arms hidden in a outfit, so I looked like I was an armless man.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to like indicate where people should go by sort of kicking the air in the direction of them. Thankfully, I did eventually graduate to a guy who throws empty paint barrels around.
Good.
But anyway, I spent all night, every night of that, during my break, making out with the girl who worked in the prison as prison girl. And to this day, and I was 18 when I did this job, to this day, that's the only name I had for her.
This prison girl.
She gave me two rides home.
Nice.
And I just said, thanks, prison girl, when I got home. And I never thought to ask her name.
Good job.
Life well lived.
You did it.
Yep. So there you go. I made out with someone I knew was prison girl. Tasted like cigarettes.
Oh, good Lord.
There you go. That's a little too deep.
There you go. There's a glimpse into our fabulous lives.
Too much information. And final question from him. Are you superstitious about your dice? For example, not letting people touch them or leave the D20 20 side up when you aren't rolling it? I have friends who are. I am not.
I don't know that I'm superstitious. It's just a weird thing where I'm like, oh, I want all of my dice to have the same number. So I'll just put, like, if I have a bunch of D6s, I'll have them all facing 6 just so they all look the same.
Hmm. I can't get into that because I'm one of those people who stacks. So I'll be sitting there stacking my D6s and D10s and so on. It's not a superstitious thing. It's because I need something to be doing with my hands.
Oh, I'll make, like, pictures out of them.
Yeah.
Like, I'll turn it into an arrow or I'll make a little smiley face on my dice.
I do all that
sort
of stuff.
But I need them to all be the same facing as well.
I just don't even have that. Dice are just one of the tools on the table for me, so I've never had that particular superstition. But I do have friends. My friend Russ, our friend Russ, is one of those.
Yeah.
He has to have those dice. He has to train his dice.
Oh, yeah. He's one of those people that will straight up be in those dice-shaming pictures.
Yeah. Or throw them away when they roll a one, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. The people who threaten their dice when they roll poorly.
Oh, my goodness. So, okay, moving on. Next questions come to us from our old friend of the show, Ryan Marshall. And he says, number one, what's up with all that hot dog stuff on Twitter? Also, how does a cartoon hot dog feel about the topic of people eating hot dogs in general?
Well, I'm fine with it. I actually promote the eating of hot dogs in general.
John, hot dog question.
Okay, hot dog question.
Okay.
Hit me.
You're scuba diving. You're about 40 feet underwater. You have about 45 minutes worth of oxygen left. You find, encased in lucite, a series of rare magic cards.
Huh.
Additionally, encased in lucite, under about 2 feet of detritus and what must be dead whale matter and so on, you find an additional lucite enclosure containing a hot dog.
Hmm.
You have the tools to bust the lucite open and get that delicious hot dog. However, you can tell just from an immediate glance that that hot dog was made at this pressure. If it had been made above, it would have been crushed into a tiny ball. But it's a perfect hot dog down here, 45 feet under the ocean waves. Do you crack open that lucite and consume that hot dog right here, underwater, with only 45 minutes of time left? Or do you crack it open and attempt to bring it to the surface, knowing full well that upon reaching the surface, the pressure change will cause it to become a loose slurry of disassociated hot dog particles?
Okay, here's what I do. I take it fully encased to the surface, leave it in there, and then I give it to you as a present. Merry Christmas.
Aww.
I got your letters.
Oh, hot dog questions are just hot dog questions. We don't know why we're doing that.
Don't worry about it. It's just a thing that happened.
It's just a crazy thing that happened, and it will probably keep happening.
If you are not following our Twitter, follow our Twitter for more hot dog questions.
Don't forget, I have all the answers to all your hot dog-related needs. So if I ask a hot dog question and you're not 100% sure, you should probably keep asking me some questions about that.
Oh, yeah.
Don't want to go in unprepared when a hot dog is on the line.
Yeah, you want to get all the information before you say yes or no one way or the other.
Okay. Next question comes... again, from Ryan Marshall. What's up with John being so good with voices? Does he have some sort of training, or is he just 1/8 mongrel folk? Well, first of all, that's racist.
That's racist.
Second of all, John's not really all that good with voices. I am just so spectacularly, unbelievably bad at them that he sounds great by comparison.
Oh,
my
yeah, it's
cat
true.
Can do a better British accent than me.
That I've seen it.
Yeah, it's just truth.
Yeah, is he just coming in here like, oi, mate, governor, how's it going there?
Mow.
Mow. Which, as we all know, is British for meow.
That's correct, yeah. So, I don't know, but John is pretty good at crazy voices. Right, John?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Give me some Wallace Shawn.
Okay,
I'll tell you what, I'm going to set up a little scenario for you, all right? Could you give me Wallace Shawn going to a grocery store and asking the person behind the counter if they have any clown nudes?
Fuck you.
No? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, moving on.
I hate you so much.
Can you just give me Christopher Walken saying clown nudes?
No. I think the second the word clown starts forming, even in my mind, I begin to lose the ability to speak.
All right. One last set of questions here. Jeff and John. Okay, after listening to the afterthought where you introduced the fridge, I popped over and checked it out. Oh, and there is already a Cheese Dudes game. This guy was suggesting that he was going to make us a Cheese Dudes game, but someone had already beat him to it. It's all right. Go ahead and make it. It's not like that Cheese Dudes game was official.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah, make whatever you want. This is America, buddy. Were we allowed to make a Duckman role-playing game? No, we were not. Are we currently in trouble for having made one? Yes, we are.
Are we probably going to be taken off of the internet because we are being sued into poverty? Of course.
Absolutely. I feel like that's obvious. Will we eventually be killed by Hollywood goons?
Duh.
Yes. But that won't stop us from making Duckman role-playing games. So go ahead. But anyway, he did ask some questions as well. Number one, is political correctness still valid as a worry, or should we all move on to just getting the fuck over it? I think political correctness is one of those terms like what's the word, global warming, where it's been picked to death and people have moved on to a better term. And if you hear someone say political correctness now, they're really just saying, I want an excuse to be an asshole.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Because political correctness as a term got latched onto by the worst sorts of people.
Yeah. You never hear anyone who wants political correctness using the term political correctness. It's always used by someone who's complaining about why they're not allowed to be racist.
Oh, this is PC culture gone mad.
Yeah. Brr. Well, I don't want to be politically... I'm not a very politically correct person. No one ever says, I am a politically correct person.
Yeah. People are like, I treat people well and with respect.
Yeah.
They're not like, I'm politically correct.
And that's actually the thing you can hear. Whenever you hear someone saying the term political correctness... just replace it mentally with being a decent person. And then you'll understand why it's still such an essential term. Because you'll hear these people saying, well, I'm not a politically correct sort. And you just, I am not being a decent person.
Oh, yeah. I tell jokes, but I don't worry about being politically correct. It's, oh, you mean you like to tell racist jokes then? Great.
Yeah, that's all that means. So it's still important, but unfortunately that term isn't useful anymore because it's been kind of co-opted.
No, it was like how at the very start, friend zone was a term that almost meant something normal. You're like, oh yeah, it just means if you're someone who has unrequited love and the other person doesn't feel that way, you're in the friend zone. Okay, that's fine. But then it got turned into, oh, if I'm in the friend zone, it means this person owes me sex and they aren't giving it to me. You're like, ah, oh, goddammit.
Yeah, well, that's just the internet. It's a big old echo chamber, and eventually every word you throw in there becomes something horrible.
Yeah.
So,
like Tub Girl or Lemon Party.
Yeah, you know, I miss the days before the internet when you could have a nice lemon party out on the patio.
You can't have a lemon party without old Dick.
Not on my patio. All right. Why is my ex so crazy? Political correctness, probably.
Probably because...
gone mad!
You are not politically correct enough.
That's probably it. There you go. I don't know. I get along with most of my exes.
I have never had a really bad breakup to the point where I never talked to them again.
I was a total asshole in high school.
Oh,
so,
I know you were.
So I've had a few of those, but it's been a long time.
Yeah. I mean, you're still an asshole, but the bad breakups have stopped.
Well, I'm not a total asshole. I'm tempered now with humor and being lazy.
Yeah, too lazy to be a total asshole.
There you go. Define need versus... oh, okay, he's saying divide need versus geek, but I don't feel like... I think he probably meant nerd versus geek.
Probably.
I'm going to guess. I'm going to go ahead and give him the benefit of the doubt and do that. And sure, nerd is kind of a dorky person, and a geek is a circus performer who bites the heads off chickens.
Done.
All right, we're good. Moving on. Have collectible card games gone too far or not far enough?
Not far enough.
Yeah, there should be new levels to collectible card games. We've been playing that Pandemic game that you picked up, that board game.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that it's got a like shelf life mechanic where like you play this thing once. You get like 12 really good games out of this game, and then you're done.
Yep.
And by way of, you have to tear stuff in this book up. You reveal things and sticker things onto other things, and you mess with the board. And I love the concept. I love how that works. And I feel like that's a thing that could be adopted to collectible card games.
Well, the whole apocryphal story of the Chaos Orb that got ripped up and then sprinkled on someone's side of the board to destroy all their stuff. If you're a Magic player, you have heard this story.
Uh-huh.
If you're not a Magic player, everything I just said is nonsense.
Yeah.
But whatever. The idea of a collectible card game where built in is a mechanic where you won't use the cards again after a certain point. Like, Magic has that whole limited and
it's so arcane.
Modern and so on.
I love playing Magic, and I still don't even know the difference between limited and modern.
Yeah, it's... I could tell you, but no one cares.
No, don't tell me.
Yeah.
I'm happy not knowing, just like I've never heard the song Friday by Rebecca Black. Never. I have not heard it once.
Oh, you've never got down on Friday?
Is that what it is? Because I don't know.
Yeah.
I literally do not know, and you singing it won't count. I've never heard the actual song, so you can just save your time.
All right. I'll just save my time.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, John. Why don't you just give me a little A Cappella Friday? Go ahead.
Why don't I just get on my phone and look up Friday by Rebecca Black right now and play it for you?
Nope.
I'll play it for the good people.
No,
in fact,
you see,
let's cut to a clip.
你也有，我也有，你知道，他们坐在前面，他们坐在后面，好难决定，我应该坐在哪儿。 星期五，星期五，我们真的很想跳舞。这个周末大家都要。
Hey, good clip, good clip. Not that I'm ever going to hear it.
No, never.
In fact, you're not even sure if I'm going to play Friday by Rebecca Black there. I might not. I might put some Phil Collins there just to keep my record pure.
Ah, the purity of essence.
Anyway, I really do think that there is a market out there for collectible card games where the pack is the same price as a Magic card pack, but it comes with like 15 cards, or they usually come with 15, yes. Right? That's a normal amount. Comes with like 20 cards instead, and five of them are literal transitory bonus cards. Like, you have to rip them up after you play them.
Oh, yeah. I would love that. I mean, they, the joke versions of Magic, the unhinged and unglued sets, had a few things. Like, it had a Chaos Orb thing where you had to tear it up and do that, sprinkle it on the board to destroy stuff effect.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's hilarious. Same thing with they had the Blacker Lotus, where you had to destroy it in order to use it.
Yeah, and the bigger Blacker Lotus.
Yeah.
Anyway, I feel like that would be a neat thing. And I know people are already saying, well, you know, if you're playing in a tournament, everyone's just going to bring all of those cards because they're more powerful, but you have to tear them up. Yes. So what?
Great. That just means tournament players get to dump all of their money into it.
Fine with me.
Great.
But yeah, I love the idea of a transitory built CCG that doesn't just use transitory to mean we have to keep people buying these cards so we'll keep releasing new sets and discontinuing the old ones, but literally you have to throw these cards around and light them on fire and tear them in half, and some of them have stickers on them that you can put on other cards.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to do that, if only because you could then, like, make it so that you go, okay, this set is good for the next 2 years, then we'll move on to the next one. Any card you have after that 2 years won't matter anymore, so go nuts.
How about
fucking
this one?
Destroy them as much as you want.
Here's my idea for a card in that set. Crazy Bolt of Lightning. And you cast it, and it does scratch off this section of the card to reveal how much damage. If it has already been scratched, discard this card.
There you go.
That's the kind of thing I want to see.
Yeah.
If this card smells like lemons, then you can counter target spell. But if it smells like oranges, that spell is copied. And then it has a scratch and sniff pad on it. I want to ruin collectible card games.
Yes.
So there you go. I don't think they've gone far enough. I think there's plenty of design space. It makes me sad that instead of people using that design space in modern card game design, they just rip off Magic entirely. I mean, have you looked at Force of Will?
No.
Oh, it's just anime Magic.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. That's all you can do anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's the only way to make a small amount of money is be close enough to Magic so that Magic players will buy your game and be able to play it.
Yeah, and then give it a different artistic niche so that you get that particular crowd of weirdos.
Yep.
So this one was like, all right, who can we sell Magic cards to and make the exact same game, but we need a new audience? Oh, I know. How about those guys that like live on anime wall scrolls and like huggable pillows?
How about the guys who loved Yu-Gi-Oh! The card game but couldn't find it anymore?
Fucking Yu-Gi-Oh! That game. That game famously has the worst audience of any game.
Yes.
Like, people who play Yu-Gi-Oh! And you worked in a game store, so you know this.
Oh, I know. We didn't sell Yu-Gi-Oh! People would come in and be like, do you have Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards? And I'm like, no, get out of here. Go to a different store. You're the type of person that buys Yu-Gi-Oh! Which means you shouldn't be in here.
You are the type of person that makes it so that game stores have a, like, reputation for stinky people.
You are the reason we have to put up notices.
Yeah. Those go home and take a shower notices.
Those please do not come in here and harass the staff or patrons.
Don't try to sell your greasy cards to the 10-year-olds that are in here.
Yes. Please do not come in here with a hiking backpack full of cards that you then splay out over a table.
This means you, Diamond Joe Biden.
God damn you, Diamond Joe. Diamond Joe super into Yu-Gi-Oh!
He would be, right?
Yeah, obviously.
There you go. So this has been an Afterthought podcast. That's all the questions we have for today.
Aw, it's been a good time. So many questions answered.
Yeah, so many stupid jokes and clown nudes.
So many clown nudes.
Oh, you almost made it that time.
Almost.
You're getting closer, buddy.
Soon enough, I'm going to master it.
So, as always, if you have any questions for Afterthought, please, please send them to us. You can do that at SystemMasteryPodcast.com, or you can send them to SystemMastery@gmail, leave them on our Facebook page, which is amazingly called System Mastery, or follow us on Twitter at System Mastery.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter for more hot dog questions.
The hot dog questions, they're going to keep coming.
Yeah, and if you do follow us on Twitter and you've got a question, go ahead and get us at System Mastery and tag it with #Afterthought. That way we can actually find you in the deluge of
people talking to us about things.
Yeah, absolutely. That's important. And don't ask us hot dog questions. That would be crass.
Come on now. Have a little bit of class.
Get your shit together. And as always, if you want, after I tell you you can get your shit together, you can also support us on Patreon.
Come on, you big dumb idiots that don't know any better.
That's why
give us money.
That's why people are asking if you're angry, because you keep calling them big dumb idiots.
I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed in how dumb they are.
God damn it. Support us on Patreon at System Mastery. You can get the bonus content episodes of our show. We're looking at changing that Patreon real soon to incorporate the fact that we're going to be doing more and more Let's Play, actual play type podcasts with games, where we will actually play games the way other podcasts do.
The way successful podcasts
yes,
do.
We're tired of being in this rinky-dink second league.
Nah, we're taking over.
It's going to be our thing.
It's ours now, see?
That's why we're announcing a brand new line of Star Wars role-playing games done live play improv style.
Yes, that's what's going to happen. Please follow us on our two-shot podcast.
Two-shot.
On our Double Shot Espresso podcast.
Oh my gosh.
Finally, as always here at System Mastery, we have a special reward available if you are a $10 or higher Patreon subscriber. After 5 episodes of $10 donations, you can send us whatever you want, and we have to read it. This week's adventure comes to us from Northstar, who has been a $10 donor for far longer than 5 episodes, and has said, "Dear System Mastery, I took matters into my own hands. Here is the story." And here we go. Once upon a time, in an ancient pine forest, there lived a dinosaur named Blazeheart Blissfultail. Blazeheart was a gentle and patient soul, but he was also quite lonely. The forest was very old, very dark, and there were no other dinosaurs there. One day, Blazeheart mentioned to his soul companion, Gray Crest Baggy Plumes the Owl, of his desire to see the world and find other dinosaurs. Always up for adventure, Baggy Plumes agreed, and so off they went. The two pals marched along for a week and a day when they came to a mighty river. Baggy Plume simply flew over, and Blazeheart, being an apatosaurus, was just about to wade across when out jumped a giant lobster. "Halt!" the lobster shouted, pincers snapping at Blazeheart. "Who dares cross my river? And who are you?" shouted Blazeheart, jumping back from a closing pincher. "I am Thunderclaw McSnapclamp, and no one crosses my river without my say-so," the lobster snapped back. "But wait," cried Baggy Plumes, alighting back to perch upon Blazeheart. "How can you say that this is your river? For is it not so that even if you were to declare a spot on the river yours, it would have already flowed on downstream? So where then is your river?" Thunderclaw thought for a moment, claws tapping upon his armored pate. "You are correct, I suppose, in a strange sort of way, and it would be silly to say all the river was mine. What with it changing so? May I follow along with you two, providing we stick to the river? I need to breathe, after all." "Of course you may join us. We are on an adventure to find dinosaurs, creatures that look rather like me," Blazeheart pronounced. And so, off they carried, downstream. The three traveled for a week and a day, until they reached a curious-looking tower made of twin spires wrapped round one another and topped by a burning light. Walking up the soul door, Blazeheart knocked. After a moment, a tiny, wizened man answered, his head almost lost in a voluminous peaked cap. "Yes," he croaked. "How may I help you?" "Hi," shouted Blazeheart. "I'm Blazeheart Blissfultail, and these are my friends Graycrest Baggy Plumes and Thunderclaw McSnapclamp, and we are looking for other dinosaurs like me." "Well now, isn't that a strange coincidence? As it happens, a large group of them passed through here to warmer climes across the ocean. Of course, that was about 1 million years ago. How did you manage to miss all of that?" intoned the old man. "I've lived for as long as I can remember, in an old dark pine forest to the north," answered Blazeheart. "And 1 million years is an awfully long time. How can I possibly catch them now?" "Well, my boy, it just so happens that I have a magic submarine, complete with a breathing apparatus for your lobster friend in case he feels like leaving the water. It can fly and travel through time. If you allow me along, we can solve this mystery together. The name is Bulkbuster Nettlekiss, by the way." Thus another new friend joined the expedition, and into the magic submarine they went to continue their quest. But that is a story for another day.